This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
A taxing music from the Beatles. Taxes are coming along. I hate to even think about it. I got to get all that stuff together. Oh, boy. Why can't they make it simple? You know, how much did you make? Send it in. I don't know. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my partner, Big Ed Davis, we thank you so much for joining us on this very tense Wednesday morning, February the 16th. We will be talking in a few minutes with Kelly Vlahos. She is a senior advisor at the Quincy Institute. And we are going to talk about the Russian-Ukraine crisis. Will Putin invade? It looks more and more like he will, but we're going to talk with Kelly and find out the latest on that. And Donald Trump has got to testify in the New York civil investigation into his businesses. You know the attorney general there, Letitia James? She's been after him like a dog after a bone. So we will get some thoughts on this, among other things, from the proprietor of the Barber Poll, mainstream America's only poll that counts, Mr. Andrew Ceraci. So stay tuned for that a little bit later in the show. And 73% of the U.S. apparently is now immune from Omicron. Did you know that? 73%? Is that enough? Are we on the backside? We are going to take a look at that as well. And a story that I cannot believe. Two Finnish lawmakers may end up in prison for expressing their religious views. We're going to talk about that as well. Stay tuned for that. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop, the best barber in the Tampa Bay area, in my opinion. And it's easy to get to him. He is in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcast Drive. It is a stoplight there. It's just a little bit west of Highway US 19, people. Call for your appointment, guys, 727-733-3773. By the way, they're open Tuesdays through Saturdays. Again, 733-3773. Well, all eyes are on that border, and I'm not talking about the southern border. I'm talking about the border between Russia and the Ukraine. In a tense council meeting yesterday, the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, warned that Russia's continued hostility towards Ukraine is a real moment of peril, as he called it, and threatens global security. It looks to me like he's going in. I don't know. I keep wondering what is in his head. He is so worried, I'm talking about Putin, about NATO and having a NATO country on his doorstep, apparently. He's already got another NATO country on his doorstep, if you think about it. He's got Poland. He's got some other countries that are part of NATO that are close by. He doesn't want the Ukraine to be there. And I guess he's willing to take this gamble. I don't think he would have taken it with Trump in the presidency, to be honest with you. I really don't. I think he sees a president, frankly, that seems rather weak. And somebody, and, you know, with the somewhat far-left administration, it typically, the far-lefties are not big on what's going on in the other parts of the world militarily. You ever notice that? They're not. So he might be gambling right. You know? He might be looking at all the odds and saying they're not going to do a damn thing, really. They want to shut down the pipeline. Well, we've got other places that we can make money when it comes to our energy here in Russia. But in the meantime, finger wagging occurring all over the place, including at the United Nations. And as I said, Anthony Blinken, our Secretary of State, is wagging his finger. He says this crisis directly affects every member of this council and every country in the world because the basic principles that sustain peace and security are under threat. The principle that one country cannot change the borders of another by force. The principle that one country cannot dictate another's choices or policies or with whom it will associate. The principle of national sovereignty. I don't know that Putin listens. I wonder if there's a way of cutting him out of the Security Council. Just knocking Russia out, saying, you know, you're going to invade a country? I don't think we'll allow you to be on the Security Council anymore. Why don't you step aside? In the meantime, I'm still wondering exactly if Germany is all in far as NATO goes. We would like to think they are. They certainly know the treachery of Putin and Russia going all the way back into World War II and even World War I. The Germans and the Russians have never really gotten along very well. But right now, sometimes money talks and BS walks, and they want that petroleum. They want that oil coming through that Nord Stream pipeline from Russia, going under the sea and coming out in Germany, where they can use it and distribute it. So we're wondering, if this invasion does occur, are they going to be able to shut off that oil pipeline? Really? I'm not so sure. It might be very, very, very interesting. Anyway, let us take our break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this with the Quincy Institute's Kelly Vlahos.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Friday morning and delighted, really delighted this morning to have Kelly Vlahos join us again. She is a senior advisor at the Quincy Institute, and she has graciously agreed to come on this morning to talk a little bit about this Russian-Ukrainian crisis. It's getting worse and worse, Kelly, since the last time you and I talked. But first off, thanks so much for being available this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Our pleasure. I don't know how to begin with this. We were just talking before you came on about trying to look into the head of Vladimir Putin, if that is at all possible. A guy that has come out of the KGB, a long time kind of an enforcer type. At least he's got that reputation. I don't know. There's all kinds of things I think that goes on with people like him.
What do you think, Kelly? Is he playing possum on this whole border? Is he really going to invade, in your opinion?
I mean, I believe me, I would be lying if I told you I knew what he was up to, or I had some special insight into his strategy. Like a lot of people I've talked to over the last 24 hours, I just don't know. I guess all you can do is try to apply the past and history and, like, you know, strategy, basic norms of strategy to this. And most people that I talk to don't think that he is going to invade Ukraine. They think that this is an elaborate, like you said, game in which he sets up the United States and its European partners into basically a frenzy, to the point where we're ready to start compromising on his demands. And, you know, he set out some more demands yesterday that are even more ambitious and less likely. But I feel like at the very root of this, he will get something out of it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that's the goal here. But I haven't talked to anybody who's really willing to put money on where this is going to go.
Nobody knows. It's a horse race kind of thing. But he doesn't want to have another NATO state rubbing up against his country. He's got Poland already, and he's got others, right? And he doesn't want Ukraine. We can even talk about the Ukraine, you know, the ethnic groups in Ukraine, and how the Crimean area may be more pro-Russian, and then the rest of the country is less Russian. But there are, you know, there are all kinds of things playing into it. Do you think he would have done something like this if Donald Trump was president?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, the crisis that we're seeing now has seedlings that go back way before Trump. I mean, we're talking the Obama administration, when a lot of this stuff was really starting to simmer. So, you know, it's hard to say. I think the 4 years in which Trump was president, I feel like he felt that he had more of an ally in the White House. But I say that with a caveat, because Trump had been pushed, you know, by Congress, you know, with this whole collusion investigation. He had been pushed into a position where he was pretty tough on Putin. You know, he passed a lot of sanctions against Putin. But I think at the very core of it, Putin probably, you know, would have definitely preferred that Trump stayed in the White House and not lose the 2020 election. And I'm sure he was happy when he won. Not so much because he was Trump and that they were cooking up some scheme, you know, for his administration. I mean, he was looking at a possible Hillary Clinton administration, and Hillary Clinton had spent the previous 4 years trying to, you know, basically foment all sorts of democratic movements in his own country and Russia, but also helped overthrow the democratically elected government in Ukraine in 2014. So it was obvious that Trump was the preferred candidate all the way through. But, you know, maybe we wouldn't be seeing this. But
that's very interesting.
That said, mm-hmm. You know, NATO looked like it was, you know, it was expanding and had left the door open to all of these former Soviet republics and Ukraine and Georgia. And so that was happening regardless of whether Trump was in office or not. So those issues weren't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. We've had this talk. Now, of course, the Biden administration is making it sound like it's inevitable. You know, and I guess there is some reverse psychology there as well, because if you continue to say that bad things are going to occur, I guess the worst thing that could happen is they will occur. And what you have said is true, but if they don't occur, you're going to look good, because somehow they're going to say, "Well, look, it was almost inevitable, but somehow it didn't occur. We're going to give you some credit," you know?
Yeah. Well, then people have been talking about that. Like, what happens if Putin doesn't invade Ukraine, and he may have never had any plans to begin with, and then the Biden administration goes back and says, "See, you know, all of the pressure that we put on,
right?
You know, our game, our A game is what won the day over." And so they can claim that their strategy, you know, which I don't know what the strategy is, but maybe, you know, putting the pressure on, you know, activating troops, you know, moving building assets around.
Be assured he'll take credit. They'll take credit. Be assured if he did nothing, and I think he would have done nothing in a way, they'll take credit for it. Now, we got this other game going on, you might call it, not really a game, with the internet and with Russian hacking, mm-hmm. and the concerns of our electrical grid and our energy grid and this and that grid. I mean, this guy Putin. I guess we can't directly link him to it, but maybe we don't want to directly link him to it because then we'd be forced to confront him on that front as well. I just wanted you to comment maybe on because that is going on as well as the Ukrainian border crisis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to put things in perspective, I mean, the United States has been engaging in cyber warfare for years. I don't want to make this a whataboutist conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that this is a fact. This is a fact of our national security architecture. We have cyber warfare technology and tactics offensive. So we're doing this on a certain level all of the time to all of our adversaries, even spying on our friends sometimes, as they did in the Obama administration. But the Russians, you know, they're very capable and they're very known for engaging in these information operations and cyber warfare as well. So I'm not saying it's not a concern. I'm just saying that this is not new that these countries engage in this. Now, my colleague Anatole Levin likes to say that we have to be very careful because while there is plenty of cyber espionage going on, just like, you know, back in the old days when we had spies everywhere, this was a normal practice, spycraft. That's quite different than actual cyber attacks, where, yes, you are putting, like, the electrical grid and personal information and data at risk. And I'm not saying that the Russians aren't doing that. I'm just saying that there seems to be a conflation by the United States government that any attempts by the Russians to sort of, like, try to penetrate or spy or do anything on in cyber warfare is an attack, you know, and that needs to be responded to in kind, which could take us to some bad places. All countries are doing it. Now, that all said, you know, it could, you know, you could see some things happening in Ukraine. We've had some, you know, reports about, I guess, their internet or there was a denial of service attack. We have to watch out for that. But I'm always of the caution. I'm always on the side of restraint that we don't believe, but that we don't react to everything in kind to escalate things further.
Right, indeed.
I would personally not want to have to start worrying about whether our internet was going to go down or our electrical grid was going to go down. Because all of a sudden there became a tit for tat.
Yeah, exactly right. We're talking with Kelly Vlahos in this very complex and concerning situation with the Russians and the Ukrainian border. She is a senior advisor at the Quincy Institute. Kelly, the Ukrainian president, did you know that he was at one time in comedy? He was a comedian?
Yes.
How did that happen, first of all? And maybe that's what they need there, of course. God. I mean, if I was living in the Ukraine, I would be looking for something to make my mood a little bit brighter anyway. Maybe that's why they elected him. He goes on and he makes this joke about Wednesday being attack day, for Russia. And then we get the aside that, oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
What's going on there with him?
Well, I think that, you know, I think this is not the time for leaders, heads of state, to be sarcastic when they're having these back and forths with press. Because, and believe me, I mean, we had a President Trump for 4 years who was, it was like watching a comedy act that he was really funny. And he would make asides and he'd crack jokes and he'd be sarcastic. But, I mean, we're in this heated moment when you have the press.
It was an awkward joke. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awkward.
Awkward and scary in a way.
And I looked at the tweets after this because I was putting up a story about the, you know, the media's role in escalating all of the tensions and hysteria. And I looked at all the tweets after he made that comment, and major news was running with it. You know, February 16th is going to be the day of the invasion. And then all of the tweets in which he had to, you know, claw it back and clarify. And, you know, so, yeah, it's probably not a good time to engage in sarcasm. And
no.
I think the Russian foreign minister, Lavrov, also had engaged in some sarcasm. I can't remember what it was, but he made some news there. And it's just...
It doesn't translate well anyway, because Russian humor is a little bit different than, say, the West. So it doesn't go over well anyway. Hey, I want to ask you about something else, though, very, very serious. There have been these skirmishes going on anyway inside Ukraine and near the border. How about that kindergarten bombing thing? I mean, all of that that's going on, that's kind of a tinderbox.
It certainly is, and it's been going on since 2014. So, like, this whole time... that we're talking about the crisis, you know, culminating. You know, there has been this low-level war back and forth between Russian separatists and Ukrainians in the Donbas region since 2014. It's just now it's reached this critical mass of attention, and it could turn to something much bigger. But yeah, they had a ceasefire in place. And apparently, the ceasefire has been broken many times, but because everything is so sensitive right now, we started seeing reports yesterday that each side was accusing the other of breaking the ceasefire. And in one case, the Ukrainians said that these Russian separatists had shelled a kindergarten. Two teachers, were injured. And then another shelling at a high school in a courtyard where nobody was injured. So now the Russians are saying that they've had people injured on their side. And so the worry is that this shelling is going to be used as an excuse for Putin to move in.
Yeah. So I guess I'll ask you this. The oil situation with Germany and Russia, one would think that if Putin is told we will not allow that completion of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline connecting Russia with Germany if you invade, I don't know exactly how they'll do that. They're going to need the approval of Germany, and Germany is going to have to be placated into knowing or believing that they're going to get that oil that they're not getting from Russia. From the auspices, basically, of the United States working out some deal. That's what I'm thinking. Your thought on that?
Well, this is why the Germans have not been fully on board with sanctioning, because they want that Nord Stream 2 pipeline to be completed. They want that energy coming in through Russia. And so I agree with you. There's going to have to be some placating. Now, the question is, do we sanction Russia before an invasion or after an invasion? And, you know, there have been some really smart people, including my colleague, who has said, why bother? Why are we going to sanction them before? Because then we lose all of our leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And it is likely that he'll invade anyway, whether he's sanctioned or not. We've been sanctioning them for years. And apparently they have 190,000 troops on the border now.
Yeah.
So, sanction is not hurt. Now, will it be a pinch? Absolutely. It might even really hurt the Russian economy. But no one that I've talked to thinks that it'll stop Putin from invading, if that's what he really is set out to do.
So
why bother doing it? It's like you're just wasting all your bullets before the real fight.
Yeah. He's mostly, in your opinion, he's mostly worried about the NATO bordering of his country. He doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO. Is that the main thing, do you think, if you had to name something?
You know, if I had to name something, I would say, yes, it is NATO. And much smarter people than I have said that if we sat down and we, at the very least, put a moratorium on new members tornado in his backyard, this would end the whole thing. That is at the crux of this, and this is an issue that goes back to the 1990s. And we had a great story go up on Responsible Statecraft this week by former Ambassador Jack Matlock, who's been, like, trying to, you know, cry from the rooftops for the last 30 years that he saw this coming. And he testified before the Senate in 1997, that's what the story is about, basically saying further expansion is going to go bring us to bad places. And here we are today.
Yeah.
So this isn't something that was started by Obama or Trump or Biden. This is something that's been...
Yeah, it's been hanging over. Yeah, the whole...
Hanging over, yeah.
You're right. Kelly, I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning. We're all going to keep our fingers crossed, of course. And I know you and I will talk again soon.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really enjoy it.
Our pleasure. All right, Kelly Vlahos. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, poor Donald Trump, now he's got to testify. That's what a judge says in that New York civil investigation into his businesses. Going to get some thoughts on that from the proprietor of the barber pole himself, Andrew Ceresi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday, a very tense Friday. Everybody's kind of worried. Yeah, things are bad all over, not just in the Ukraine. Look what's going on here, right? The cost of goods, now gas and oil, and raised to a point where, I don't know, it's a bummer. And by the way, taking a cue from those Canadian truckers, a political action committee is going to partner with truck convoys to protest what it deems as overreaching government restrictions and mandates here in the United States and in Washington. The Great American Patriot Project, asking volunteers to contribute, join, or support a convoy of truckers slated to travel to Washington, D.C. next month. Yeah, there we go. Well, we got the proprietor of the barber pole with us. And Andrew, Donald Trump has trying to avoid testifying in New York. Obviously, it's a politically motivated situation with Attorney General Letitia James. But a judge has ruled that Trump and two of his kids have to testify under oath in a civil investigation into his business practices. What's going on there?
What's going on there, Paul?
Yeah.
They're nervous about Hillary. Are you kidding me? They're nervous what's going down with the Democrat Party right now with their spying. So they're trying everything they can to try and catch Trump with something.
Yeah, shine the spotlight off of what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they ain't going to find nothing. It's politically motivated. They are running scared as can be. Look at yesterday, Hillary Clinton went somewhere in New York. People were outside chanting, lock her up already.
I know.
Okay.
Do you think she's honestly thinking of running for president again?
Well, Paul, the Democrats are so stupid. They think that what she's doing is good. They'll think she's great.
I mean, I just can't see them wanting to. And now we've got this Durham report.
That's what I'm saying.
Which she is trying to avoid. So at the same time she wants to run for president, she's got a duck for cover on the Durham report. I just don't understand why she doesn't just enjoy her retirement.
Well, Paul, I think she should enjoy her retirement behind bars. They can put her in the White House. They'll paint it white for her and put her behind bars.
And she can have a striped, a beautiful striped pantsuit.
But, Paul, you know, you want to solve this problem in the Ukraine, don't you? It's easy.
Yeah, I'm going to send you over there, but go ahead. What will you do?
I would send Hillary Clinton there and give him 30% of our uranium. He'll back off for that.
Oh. Well,
I think she gave him 20%.
I was going to say.
30, that's 50%. They'll have half our uranium, and they'll back away. Hillary needs to handle it.
You know, could you imagine, going? And a lot of people don't remember this, but you're right. We ended up selling some sort of a percentage of our uranium out west to the Russians, didn't we? Somehow, or the Chinese. I can't remember which it was.
It was the Russians.
It was the Russians.
20%.
20%. Can you imagine if that was done under Trump, how the media would have responded?
Oh, my God. We'd have to investigate him forever.
Oh, he would have been impeached.
Paul, this is all going down, and the American people need to see this going down. The news, you don't hear one word out of the news media. You know why? Because they all tried to cover up and say that it was happening and everything else, and Trump was guilty, he's colluding with the Russians. They feel like fools. They can't say nothing.
No. Well, of course. And everybody can see the cover-up with the Hunter Biden situation now. And I saw another poll. I guess Biden is now in the 30s when it comes to his performance. another Quinnipiac is like about 38%.
I think he's about the same thing as Trudeau. Do you see what Trudeau is?
Yeah.
16%.
16?
16%,
no kidding.
Approval.
Wow.
In Canada.
16%.
And I think Biden's about the same. When you're hearing in the 30s, I think that's a lie and a cover-up.
Yeah, I think it might be closer to 16. But getting to Trudeau, how can he stand up there in his parliament and start throwing this Nazi blanket over all the truckers and white supremacist blanket? Does he not know that people are just going to be absolute? He's losing a goodly portion of the people that probably originally supported him.
That's right. And that's good. He needs to go. Biden needs to go. Look, they got Kamala Harris in the Ukraine. What the
I know.
Hell is she going to do?
Well, stay there would be nice.
That's right. That would be beautiful.
Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing?
But I don't know what Putin's going to do. And you know what? I really don't care.
Well, don't you find it could be a tinderbox that could somehow resonate here, though? I mean, if he does invade the NATO countries and we're part of NATO and this and that, you know how these things get out of hand.
Paul, NATO has never done nothing for the United States of America. Nothing. Anytime they send the troops, maybe 100, maybe 150, where we had 15,000. They've never done nothing. I mean, to me, NATO is a nothing. And Europe needs to deal with Europe, America with America, Russia with Russia.
Should we get out of NATO?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Why are we there? We're the policemen of the world? We don't have an army no more. We got a woke army.
Where no, you're going? Right.
Where are we going?
Yeah, I think the time has come to pull a lot of our troops out of different places. But they've become so dependent on us, right?
Who cares? Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares, Paul? That's like a bird pushing his little one out of a nest. Stand up on your own.
Yeah.
The time has come. Listen, Germany was taking over the world at one time. You were able to stand up on your own then. Stand up on your own now.
Well, if it wasn't for the United States getting involved in World War II, who knows how that would have ended up. We did go over then. We couldn't stay uninvolved in that one.
That's right.
Well, so the point being that maybe there needs to
What would have happened to America if Europe was all Germany? What would have happened? Nothing.
Oh, my. Are you kidding?
What would have happened?
Well, if all of Germany, if all of Europe turned German, including the United Kingdom and France and all of the other, Spain.
Yeah.
You don't think that eventually there would have been some sort of a situation with us? And remember that Japan was involved with Germany, so of course they're going to be splitting the spoils with that situation. And we had Pearl Harbor, and we had, you know, American colonies out in the Pacific.
That's right. That's where we had to go, because that was an attack against us, Paul. But if you look at Europe today, is Germany Germany? No. They're taken over by immigrants. Is England England? No. They're taken over by immigrants. All of them, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Speaking about borders, it looks like we got some very scary figures on our southern border.
It's terrible.
To the number of people that have really been crossing in.
It's disgusting. But you know what's going to wake up the American people about the border, Paul? When we get a good blast over here. The crime is building and building and building, and the people are fed up with that. But we haven't had a big blast. And that's what's going to wake up the people in this country.
Yeah.
The people in this country need to be awakened, and they need to be afraid of something. Because they think that now America, nobody's going to bother America. We're being taken over from within without you even seeing it.
Well, that's normally how cultures collapse, from within. And empires collapse from within, never from without.
That's what I'm saying. Look at us. Look at our government's been infiltrated. Look at the Democrat Party. And they had an insurrection against a standing president.
Mm-hmm.
That's an insurrection, Paul, what Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party did, not what happened January 6th,
right,
my friend. The insurrection happened in 2020 or in 2016.
In the meantime, we got Biden kind of, off there in the corner. He's going to give his State of the Union in March.
Oh.
When was the last time you remember a president giving a State of the Union in March? They've always given it in January, but apparently he forgot.
Well, Paul, you know what it is? He's going to brag. He's going to say, we have beat COVID. I told you I would beat it. There are no more mask mandates. That's what's going to happen March the 1st, and I put money on it.
Yeah. I think you may be right about that. By the way, we're going to talk a little bit later about this estimated 73% of America now immune to Omicron. Do you buy into that about 73% of our country is immune to it?
Paul, I don't believe nothing I hear, just what I see, and only half of that.
That's true.
Okay, half of what, I mean, I see a bunch of sick people dropping in front of me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Hey,
I don't see that. I don't see people come in my shop all sick and runny noses. Everybody seems to be feeling fine.
Yeah.
But you see, this is going to be Biden's big thing, and he's going to do it on March the 1st, because this convoy they're talking about here is supposed to start March the 3rd for the mandates. But you see, him doing that isn't going to stop this, because this convoy they're talking about doing isn't about just mandates. They're tired of what's going on in the country, period.
Yeah, overall, it gives them a reason. I understand what you're saying there. So let me, on a personal level, how is Nicole, your wonderful wife, who has been battling a little bit of the virus, how is she doing?
She's doing great. She's still not going out anywhere because the hair is still coming in, so I don't plan on doing anything to the middle of summer.
No, understood. But it's a positive for her. That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. She seems to be. You know, she does get a lot of different side effects from having the COVID. She'll get shortness of breath every now and then.
Wow.
She doesn't feel good. She'll get tired, and that can go on for 6 months. I've been researching it. But we got to thank the Chinese for this.
But she is on the mend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
That's wonderful.
Definitely. Yeah. She's doing better.
And is there anything new up in Tallahassee in the governor's mansion with Governor Ron DeSantis' wife? She's also been battling, but her battle is with breast cancer. Well, we've heard good things about that, right?
She's doing well. She's still going through some chemo. I guess she had. She still has to go through surgery, but other than that, she's standing strong. She's a tough girl, Paul.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, as always, Andrew, always a delight to have you on. Love your energy. Love your opinions. Thank you so much for being with us, my friend. And, of course, on Monday, we hopefully will talk again. God willing, of course.
You got it, buddy. You got it. Right. Don't get invaded. Be good.
Exactly.
Bye-bye.
All right. There he goes, the Master Barber. The Master Barber. And get over there, by the way, guys. It's 727-733-3773. Okay, let us take our final break. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit more about the Omicron virus. We're going to talk a little bit more about what they're doing in Finland. And we're going to talk a little bit about the way an Olympic Chinese skater was treated by her own people.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and thank you so very much for being with us. Remind you that we are on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. But thanks to Big Ed, all of our shows are on podcasts, so you can go and listen to us anytime. Go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. All right. So, the Omicron wave that assaulted the U.S. this past winter, and this winter, I should say, also bolstered its defenses, leaving enough protection against the coronavirus that future spikes will likely require much less, if any, disruption to society. Now, that seems to be good news. It says here almost half of eligible Americans have received booster shots, nearly 80 million confirmed infections overall, and many more infections have never been reported. But all of the antibodies that people now have gotten, adding all of that together, 73% of Americans are for now immune to Omicron. That's good news. I think we are on the downside of this thing, and it seems like every variant coming along, including the Delta and then to the Omicron, et cetera, has gotten a little bit weaker. So hopefully we're getting out of this damn thing. Now, I want to talk about this thing in Finland. I almost can't believe it. Finnish members of parliament, two of them, one of them happens to be, by the way, a Lutheran bishop, were in a courtroom earlier this week facing up to 2 years in prison. And you know what their crime was? Expressing their religious views. One of them faces three charges of ethnic agitation for a 2004 pamphlet and for taking part in a discussion on a radio show in 2019 and for tweeting recently a picture of the Bible in Finland. I thought Finland was a democracy. Doesn't Finland show up on our top 10, Ed, from time to time as, you know, supposedly one of the best places to live? Well, this certainly would scare me. It would scare me to death. Mm. You can't even bring up your own religious views. The bishop that is a member of parliament there faces a single charge of ethnic agitation for hosting a pamphlet on his church's website. What? It boggles my mind. Here's what the bishop said. I'm very optimistic to win the case, but I have to say I've been very optimistic all the time. I'm an optimist. I would never have believed that this would happen in Finland because we are a democracy with freedom of speech and freedom of religion in our constitution. Wow. It has been very unbelievable that this process has continued. So we have a bishop and a female that are both members of the Finnish parliament that are having these things occur. When the charges were announced, the state prosecutor said that the Finnish woman, her comments were made to cause intolerance, contempt, and hatred towards homosexuals, just because she talked about the fact that the Bible, an unrelated Bible verse. Well, that's kind of scary. All right. Let's hope things turn around in Finland. Now, I said Chinese skater. I was wrong. That's a Russian skater in the Olympics, Ed. And I see this story that Ed himself was upset. We were chatting about it before the show. Ed, what happened? This Russian skater,
yeah.
This is the same skater that they said had these drugs in her, right?
Yeah, this is 15-year-old Kamila Valieva, who was 15 years old, tested positive for a banned substance, was being held out of the Olympics until a judge gave an appeal that basically an injunction that she could skate for now, and then we'll see what happens later. And the skating world was very upset about that because it's just cheating. It's flat out cheating. Anyway, after the short program, Kamila was in first place. Everything was looking good for her. And last night, or yesterday actually, was the finals, which is the long program, which is most of your score and gets you a medal placement. When she went out and did her routine, she fell flat on her face, basically. Had a horrible, horrible outing. 15 years old, she comes off the floor. First of all, as soon as she finished the routine, she threw her hands up in the air, like whatever, and came off the floor in tears. And usually when they come off, the skater comes off the floor, there's a coach there or two coaches to either console you or congratulate you or whatever. As she came to the wall, because the announcers had a Russian interpreter, that they couldn't believe that the coaches were standing there at the wall basically berating her, telling her the things that she did wrong, got her off the floor and sat down, and they put you in an area and you wait for your score and you look at the video screen.
Right.
And this poor 15-year-old is sitting there uncontrollably crying.
By herself?
Sitting there with a coach on the right and a coach on the left, but enough room between them. They're not even sitting. And they won't even console her. They won't. They won't hug her. They won't rub her.
Not touch her.
Nothing at all. And she's got her hands in her face, her face in her hands, rather, uncontrollably crying. The scores came up. She wound up with fourth. Then on the other side of the corner, in this area, we've got three Russian skaters. Now we've got the one who plays second. She's throwing a fit because she says, I've done everything you people want me to do, and I still didn't get first. Blah, 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 blah. Then you've got the other Russian skater who is the winner over here on the other side. She's standing there all by herself like, hey, I won. Somebody, hello? I'm over here, and it was just a fiasco. But to see that poor girl at 15 years old crying, it's just like if you walk by and you see a kid on the
street, heartless,
crying, don't you stop and say, "Oh, come here, everything's gonna be okay."
Exactly.
This poor
girl
uncontrollably crying her eyes out,
And kind of like just left to her own devices. That is, I can understand how people would feel.
That's the Russians.
They can be cold.
That is the Russians.
And maybe they were worried, I say they, the coaches were worried that the impression of them coming over to help console her would be bad for them, and they would worry about how they would be treated when they went back to Moscow or something.
Could be. I mean, they just don't show compassion.
Yeah.
There's
fear involved in all of
what
that.
What they're saying is if you don't win, you lose.
That's right.
If you don't win, everything
so much
else,
pressure to
everything
win in
else
Russia,
is losing.
It means so much to them.
Yes.
Putin and everybody.
Anyway, the first, the two Russian skaters got first and second, and a girl from Japan got third.
Oh,
and the girl, Kamila, she wound up with fourth.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll attract more people to watch the Olympics. Remember how bad the ratings were.
And they were saying this, we've never seen, this is history.
Yeah.
Never seen this unfold.
And you even got emotional.
I did. I felt so bad. I still feel bad for that poor little girl. I want to hug her.
Yeah.
You poor thing.
Yeah.
15.
Yeah. Big Ed has a heart. He has a big heart. Okay, Ed, let's do something here. Speaking about Putin, we're going to do the top 10 most evil leaders of the 20th century. I don't know why, but I thought, you know, with everything going on with Putin these days, let's see if he's on the list, because he was around in the 20th century, too. Ready? Here we go. Number 10. Joseph Mengele. You ever hear of that name?
Well, Sounds familiar.
He was the doctor of death during the Nazi Holocaust. He would perform experiments. I mean, it was bad enough to be a Jew and be in Auschwitz. He'd perform experiments on them while they were there. Enough said. Number 9. A guy I didn't know until I saw this, Mengistu Haile Mariam. He's still alive, by the way. He rose to power in Ethiopia, and he had toppled and murdered, their former emperor Haile Selassie in 1974. But he did all kinds of horrible things. Number 8, Idi Amin. Remember that guy? Of Uganda, Idi Amin. They even made a movie here. Forrest Whitaker played him. You know the actor Forrest Whitaker. Idi Amin ruled as dictator of Uganda until a military coup, after launching a coup in 1971. His nickname was the Butcher of Uganda. Number 7. Well, we know this guy, Saddam Hussein. And they ended up executing him. He was president of Iraq, though, from 1979 to 2003. Common thread in his life was his morbid thirst for power, absolute power, no matter how high the cost in human
life. Boy, he had a painful death, didn't he?
Yeah.
I remember him hiding, and the American soldiers finding him.
Yeah.
And his first words, "My name is Saddam Hussein, and I wish to negotiate."
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't look quite the brave
warrior,
did he?
And then they gave him back to the village, and that was all that she wrote on that guy.
That's all she wrote.
Goodbye.
They hung him.
Yeah.
Number 6, Kim Il-sung. Now, that's one of the North Korean dictators. Yeah. He ruled until 1994, from 1949 until his death in 1994. There is nothing democratic, of course, in North Korea. He is the one that got it named the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which there's nothing whatsoever democratic. And, of course, we know after that his son and his grandson is currently in power. Number 5, here's an older one, but he got into the 20th century before he died. Leopold II, he's the king of Belgium. He ruled until 1909. He was a nasty piece of work. He deserves credit on the list because of what happened in the Congo, which he acquired as his private property back in the late 1800s. Millions of Congolese were mutilated, killed, or died from disease during his rule. All right, number 4. Oh, I gotta do this quick. Pol Pot. All right, Khmer Rouge. Number 3.
That clock's 30 seconds fast, by the way.
Oh, it is? So we have a little more time.
Yeah, 1 minute.
Number 3 is Joseph Stalin, Uncle Joe in Russia. We know how horrible he was to his own people and the millions of people that starved there. Number 2, Mao Zedong. He did the same thing to his people in China. Many, many, many millions starved during his socialistic purges. All right, Ed, who's number 1?
Well, if the poll was taken around here by a couple of shows or one show, Donald Trump?
I don't think he's the worst. How about Adolf Hitler?
Yeah.
We're talking about the 20th century. Of course, it's Adolf Hitler. Good old Adolf. The Führer started World War II, among other things. All right, thanks for being with us. We'll be back on Monday. Remember, freedom works.